Chris Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
This sort of feels like the first official off-season episode of Tipping Pitches, huh?
Yeah, we've like finally moved past that World Series. We don't need to rehash it anymore.
I feel like we've moved extremely past that World Series. Like, I don't even feel like I remember it happening.
I just don't. I mean, I blacked out during it, so I just don't remember any of it. I'm going to go back and listen to last week's episode to refresh my memory.
Yeah, I'm not. That was kind of a long one.
Yeah, it was.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah? I haven't seen you much recently.
Yeah, I
know. I went away this weekend.
Yeah, you were out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spent my weekend at Penn State.
Oof.
Saw them beat Rutgers, froze my toes off, almost lost my hands to see them only wake up in the second half. So
that's good.
You know, it is what it is. Penn State is a place that I've been multiple times, and I can't really say much more about it other than that.
It exists. Like, on the plane of things it exists, right there as a data point.
I actually will argue back against that. It sort of feels like it exists on an alternate plane. Anyway, what'd you do this weekend?
I pretty much stayed indoors.
Smart move.
Yep. I watched the Great British Baking Show, actually.
I saw that on Twitter. How is it?
It's really good.
Why did you watch it?
I mean, why not? It's beautiful. I recommend you watch it. I love cooking shows.
I do too.
And this one is like beautiful. It's not like cutthroat or like contrived drama or anything.
I like the cutthroat.
But I watched this and I was like, this feels like such a pleasant like reprieve from the shit show of a world around us. Everyone's like really nice to each other, complimenting their food. I feel bad when everyone gets out. Yeah.
All right. I'll get to it then.
Yeah, do it.
With all my free time.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have a lot of free time in like 6 weeks.
True. Yeah.
For like the next 6 months. Hopefully less than that. Anyway, well.
That means we're going to bump this up. 2 episodes a week. You down? 3? 7? Daily?
Twice
Once
daily?
In the morning and once in the evening?
No. Tipping Pitches is a weekly podcast hosted by your faves. Anyway, enough non-baseball talk. We have a very sad story to talk about this week. Unfortunately, we have to kick the podcast off in a sad manner. Roy Halladay passed away tragically like a week back now, a little bit more than a week back now, in a plane crash. It was really sad. He was only 40, and it was like very well known around the league that he had like a family, and he was a family man. So. It's unfortunate that we have to start with this. I think I hate this as much as you do. But just in light of this news, we should talk about him as like, we should talk about the lasting memories that we have of him and like the impact that he left on our like young baseball viewership, because we were really young when he was coming up, and he was sort of like a mythological figure because he played in Toronto, at least for me, because he played in Toronto, and like I never really had to watch him. I just would see highlights of him throwing complete games all the time.
Yeah.
With that bizarre windup. So like, what are your lasting memories of Roy Halladay, and how are you internalizing this news?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was going to say the same thing. He was kind of just this very ethereal like figure that was just kind of there. He existed, and he was in the same league, but different division. So it's not like the A's faced him very much. And so I didn't really get a bunch of opportunities to necessarily watch him or sit down and take the time to really take it all in while I was kind of growing up. But he really just kind of cemented himself as, in my mind, as like the pitcher of the 2000s, kind of in the way that like Verlander was that guy, kind of as the decade started to turn, right? Halladay was like the number one guy in all of baseball. Like when I think back to that era, we had kind of come out of the he kind of essentially hit the very first team that he played on in 1998. He was 21 years old with the Toronto Blue Jays. He played alongside Roger Clemens, and it kind of feels like he almost took that torch from him when Clemens retired in the I don't know, what was it, mid-2000s?
At least on the field. He's sort of like the anti-Clemens in another way.
Yes, exactly. But in terms of, like, you know, the guy that you think about as leading the league, and it's really kind of ironic because they were two wildly different pitchers, right? Halliday did not try to overpower hitters or anything like that. He was more of a crafty pitcher, and it's really kind of cool that he was the guy to lead it as a coming out of this age of Clemens and Martinez and he really just had an awesome run there in the in like the like 2007 to 2010 kind
of
era.
I mean he's far and away the best pitcher of his generation, but I think beyond that, like his ability to just to win over fan bases that weren't even of his own team. Nothing in baseball is easier for me than hating people on the Phillies. And it was impossible for me to hate him when he was a member of the Phillies. Right after the news of his passing, there were a ton of, obviously, messages from players out on Twitter and everything. But I remember hearing, I forget where I was reading or listening, but there were just a bunch of stories about people would show up thinking that they were getting to the facility early to get, like, some work in. And Halliday would be there already, like, drenched in sweat and, like, would have completed an entire workout before anyone was even getting there to get there early. And I think that was really evidenced in the way he played and the way he pitched, just his ability to go late into games and to say, this is my day, no one else worry about anything else. I feel like as a teammate, that would be a very reassuring quality to have in your ace, just knowing that, like, this is Roy's day, like, we're good. All we have to do is put up a couple runs and everyone in the bullpen gets the day off. And I remember when I was a kid, there was a stretch. This is probably going to make our older listeners feel relatively old, but when we were kids, there was that show, Jim Rome is Burning, and I remember like coming home from like middle school and watching it, or like elementary school and watching it, and he was like, it was essentially, the show was just him hot-taking about a bunch of stuff, and he had this hot take that Roy Halladay should come out of games more and stop throwing complete games so that he can let the bullpen get work in every 5 days, and it's so funny to look back on that now, knowing how great of a career he ended up having, and this was back when he was on the Blue Jays, but knowing how great of a career he ended up having and how dominant he was and how all the adages that we know now about, like, third time through the order, the more times you face batters, the worse you are, he just sort of defied all that. And yeah, I mean, those would be my lasting images of him, and just how beloved he was by the Philadelphia Phillies fan base when I was growing up.
Yeah, it, you know, with all the talk about like bullpenning these days and kind of what we saw unfold through these playoffs, I have a feeling that if he was pitching in 2017 still, he would be the one guy where it's like, yeah, I'm not going to touch that. I'm just going to let him go until he runs out of steam. I am not going to try anything fancy about bringing my relievers in starting in the fifth inning. I am just going to let him run. I mean,
yeah, I think that to your point about like how Verlander is to us now. He was that way then.
Yeah.
And I think he would continue to be that way. It's like some people just, the rules don't apply to some people. Some people are so good and so incredible that rules don't apply. And he was one of those people.
His nickname was Doc, which I don't know, just feels so fitting to me too. It was
such
like
a baseball thing.
It is such a baseball thing. Doc Halliday.
It's like Field of Dreams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, I don't know, it felt very perfect. He was kind of this, carried himself very professionally, felt like this older figure on the team. Even when he was like 24, 25, he still felt like this kind of old, wise figure that you could look up to and maybe ask for advice or whatever. You know, I don't know what was going on in the clubhouse at that time, obviously. But
can I just say, his career high for innings in a season, are you prepared for this? Are you sitting down? Is everyone listening to this sitting down? 266 innings?
Yeah.
There were like five pitchers this year who crossed 200.
Yeah.
To pitch 266 innings in a season and then come back the next year, he only pitched 133 the next year. But for the rest of your career.
But he did have a 4.20 ERA the next year. So.
But for the rest of your career to go over 200 a bunch more times after pitching 266 innings in 1 year is insane.
Yeah, they let him go all the way up to 233 as a 34-year-old. They were like, we know you're getting up there, but fuck it.
I remember the end of his career was sort of just like he hit the wall and just he didn't have it anymore, probably because of all of that usage over those years. But he still had like a really long, extremely successful career. And I mean, that just kind of happens when you put in that much work, when you work as hard as he did for as long as he did. So hopefully he continues to be remembered in the proper light that he has earned.
Yeah, and there are a lot of, I mean, we can obviously speak to it as fans who watched him growing up, but you should definitely go search out the stories that have been kind of streaming out just about his personal life and players talking about him and remembering him, who, you know, got this very up close and personal perspective of this guy who, to us, was this just kind of, you know, very far away figure.
Yeah, like the Doc.
Yeah.
Yeah, but specifically to that point, you should check out all the things that like Carlos Ruiz has had to say and like their friendship over the years. He was Roy Halladay's catcher in Philadelphia, and like the friendship that they built. And if you can find anything written about that, then definitely do it, because that is the light that he deserves to be remembered in.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah. Anyway, on to some lighter news.
But still kind of sad.
Yeah. We're not going full on happy, but
we're trending up.
Wistful nostalgia.
Yeah.
We're like halfway in between on this scale. So Carlos Beltran's retiring.
Yeah.
Man, he was one of my favorite players growing up.
Yeah.
Just because like when I became old enough to really root for the Mets on a day-to-day basis and like actually know what I was talking about, he was like one of their best players. And he was like an integral part of that playoff run before the Mets had all of their epic collapses. But anyway, how you feel? How you feel that Carlos Beltran's going out on top?
Yeah, I'm glad he got that ring because he needed it. I would have been really sad if he did not get that. And I don't know. I wonder if he hadn't gotten it, if he would have stuck around. Probably not. I feel like he has kind of reached his eclipse.
Yeah.
The game is kind of passing him by at this point. But man, what a career. I mean, not many switch hitters have had the career that he had. And I think we've talked about him on past episodes. But like, he used to be fast, too.
Yeah, we talked about how he was like OG five-tool player. But we also talked about how he transitioned into this older period of his career so well and with such humility, and just like how willing he was to take a lesser role on the Astros on a championship team and mentor younger players and not have an ego about it. Like, younger players on the Astros, 23-year-old kids who we have talked about ad nauseum on this show, felt comfortable enough that they could make fun of Carlos Beltran with the whole glove retirement ceremony that they did halfway through this year, which I can't believe that was this year. That feels like years ago. Just the fact that younger players feel that they can make fun of the elder statesman of the team just shows you how willing he was to accept that and be part of that and be part of that dynamic with the team. So I'm really happy that he went out on such a positive note. And even that, like, our final lasting memory of him is going to be him being interviewed by that Fox Sports 1 group and like talking with those guys.
I just want to say one thing about how good his career was. It was so good that he retires with a, from Baseball Reference, 69.8 WAR, which ranks, get this, 69th all time. That is a nice career, if you ask me. Yeah,
I can't. He's now the token player of the podcast. Sorry, Robinson Cano. It's Carlos Beltran. And to do it, he had to have a negative 0.6 WAR this year. He went backwards so that he could get to 69.
I respect that so much. I'm just going to pretend that he knew what he was doing. He was like, I got to do this. I got to do this for the people.
Yeah.
I'm the player of the people.
He definitely did it.
Yeah.
For the people. Can we also, in the links in this episode, can we put, there was a tweet from, I think, probably Darren Woolman,
yeah,
of his spray chart.
Oh my God.
Over his career.
Oh my God.
Literal just,
art.
Yeah. It's put that shit in the MoMA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It really is beautiful. It's like a fucking Jackson Pollock painting. It's just splattered everywhere to all fields, which is really part of what made him so great.
All right. Well, we went from very sad to wistful and bittersweet. And when we come back, we're going to get into our bread and butter. So, Alex, one of my favorite things about professional athletes is when they're just really good at other things and it makes you feel really terrible about yourself. You know, like, for example, Damian Lillard, really good rapper. How is that fair?
Like, legitimately good rapper. Like, not like he was like, I have money, I'm going to rent out a studio. He was like, no, like, you don't get it. I have bars.
Yeah. And, like, there was a Iman Shumpert freestyle on Breakfast Club, I think it was. And it was kind of fire. I don't know if he has, like, the Dame Lillard ability to put out a full album, but we'll see, because apparently he's releasing an album soon. Like, that's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous to be that talented that you're, like, in the 1% of, like, multiple professions.
That's not fair.
Do you think we're ever going to make it to the 1% of podcasters? I think we could do it.
Does that mean we have to get good at something else? Or do we have to just be the, like, the best podcast?
No, can we even get it into, like, yeah, do we have to be the best podcast? Can we even get... Can we check one box, let alone like the two that these guys are doing?
Yeah.
We could do it.
We can do it.
I think we won Rookie of the Year for podcasters, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. That was the announced one. You have to Google that.
Yeah. But shouts out to everyone who voted for us and who supported us this whole way. Thank you so much.
We're the darlings of the BBWAA.
Yeah, we are.
But anyway, this is a roundabout way of saying that what the hell, Mookie Betts bowled 300.
Yeah.
And he's like trying to qualify.
Yeah,
for
he's
the
like,
PBA tournament?
He's like among the 150 top bowlers in the world. Like not baseball bowlers.
He's like...
Not other sports bowlers. Like just general professional bowlers. He's among the best in the world.
Yeah, so there's the PBA qualifying is going on right now. And there's like 183 people who are trying to qualify right now. And Mookie is like 156 out of 183. Which is like, he's not going to make the cut. But also, he's one of the best young professional
baseball
players.
Also, what the hell? he's not worse out
of the best.
This is a hobby.
Yeah. He, like, grew up playing both, and I don't know. Do you think this makes him a better baseball player, his ability to to bowl?
Sure. You know what? Why not? I'll bite. Yes. Yes, it does. I think you need that hand-eye coordination and some real precision. And if he's able to put some spin on the ball with the flick of his wrist, then maybe he'll be flicking the ball to all fields.
That's one way of looking at it. I feel like the bowling spinning motion is sort of similar to the
like when you
batting,
roll your hands over.
Yeah. It's not totally unrelated.
It's not dissimilar.
What do you think? What's your career high in bowling?
Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe like a 180 or something.
Ooh, look at you. Hot shot.
Yeah.
That's nice. Let's go bowling for the podcast.
Yeah, I'm down.
All right. Has nothing to do with baseball. We just go. We record ourselves.
Except we invite Mookie Betts.
Yeah. Well, let's see if he comes.
Yeah.
I mean, cool. I feel like why not?
Yeah.
We just won Rookie of the Year. He'd be on that up
He'll
and up.
Do it. yeah, so this is just absolutely insane. I'm impressed. They were talking on Effectively Wild about how they were like, kind of impressed, but also this is obviously more common than, say, like a perfect game, right? Still, I want to reiterate that this is a hobby. Like, he is a professional baseball player, spends 7 months out of the year doing this other thing, not really focusing on his bowling, and then November rolls around, and he's like, all right, time to get out the old ball, dust it off, cracks his wrist, and just bowls a 300.
Have you ever actually watched a video of him bowling or seen a picture of him bowling?
Yes.
He fits right in.
Yep.
Yeah, he looks like he's just a normal, it doesn't look like he's some hulking professional baseball player who just stepped into the bowling alley. I almost said bowling ring. No, bowling alley and is like way out of place. I feel like if people didn't know and it wasn't being covered that Mookie Betts was doing this, he would just be like a normal ass dude. If he was using like a false name, I feel like it would just, no one would raise any alarms.
Yeah.
All right. I have a question.
Yes.
If you had to draft one other MLB player to win you a bowling tournament against all the other MLB players, who are you taking? Who's the other best bowler not named Mookie Betts in MLB?
Huh.
Really deliberating over there.
I'm going to take Syndergaard, not because I think he's a good bowler, but because if he can bowl it fast, I think that's really all you need.
As long as they can go fast and
straight.
I don't
need precision. I just need you to hit them all. Even if it like bounces off the back and
comes all the way back up to you. Yeah. I'm going to go with Pat Neshek.
He got
the submarine motion. He's kind of a weirdo. He definitely dabbled in bowling for a little bit in his life.
Yeah.
If he didn't dabble in bowling, he probably dabbled in some other weird sport. I think he's got it, man. I think you give him like 2 weeks, he practices it as he cares about it like 10% of how much he cares about collecting signatures.
Yeah.
I think he could do it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but he gets pissed at all the other bowlers for not signing his ball.
Yeah, he'd be like, he would be the guy that pulls the famous, who do you think you are, I am? Now we have to link to that too. All right.
So we got to talk about...
Elsewhere in strange baseball.
We got to talk about our boy, Josh Beckett. Josh. This is the Sports Illustrated headline. Report. Two-time World Series champion Josh Beckett arrested for tackling singer at open mic night.
Party foul.
Yeah. Yo, check out this just image of him diving forward. Like,
yeah.
This
was like parallel to the ground.
Yeah, this was not he ran up and like gave the guy a shove or whatever. He like was airborne.
He like Ray Lewis running down the middle, like laid this dude out.
So he was tackling a country singer. So I kind of get it.
I'm with him spiritually.
Yeah, he was at a Texas country club and was intoxicated, as one does when you're at a Texas country club. And there are really no details as to why he did this. It says he admitted to stage diving, but that's not what stage diving is, bro. You don't dive onto the stage.
He got it mixed up, right? He was so drunk that he was like, stage diving, this is it. And he just dove at the stage.
Beckett's lawyer told TMZ that he was engaging in horseplay. First of all, bad Texas pun. Second of all, horseplay? He tore the dude's rotator cuff.
Yeah, no, I was just about to say that. Here's what it says. TMZ said police were called and that the singer suffered serious injuries, including a torn rotator cuff. What?
What the hell?
How do you even lay someone out so hard that they tear their rotator cuff? What happened? Yeah. I need video of this. Damn, is there a video of it? No, it's just pictures.
I'm like mid-flight.
It's definitely a still. Okay, the photo at the top of this picture definitely is still from a video. Why would someone be standing there waiting to take a picture of this happening? Unless they knew Josh Beckett.
So like, check this out.
Yo, dude, get your camera ready. Start taking that live photo. But yeah, we'll link to this as we do to everything that we talk about, because all this podcast is just a collection of shit that we saw throughout the week.
You want to take a bet on what he was eating while at the country club? Because I'm going to guess it was fried chicken and beers.
And beers?
Yep. Come on.
My boy Bobby Valentine was there.
Yep.
He's trying to get involved.
Who was Papelbon?
John Lackey. He's the one who took the photo. Papelbon took the photo.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Josh Beckett, come on.
What are you doing, man? But also, depends on what the country singer was saying / doing / who the country singer was.
Yeah, this is a bold move, but I don't even disagree with it.
Yeah. Although, tearing someone else's rotator cuff is rough.
Yeah.
Especially as a pitcher. Like,
that's messed up.
You know what that is.
Yeah.
You know how to,
yeah.
You know what it's like to go through that. Probably equally as weird is this next story that we're going to talk about. Aubrey Huff. What are you doing, man?
This one, I just can't really get over. So Aubrey Huff tweeted a few days ago. It's a series of tweets. So the first one reads, read an article in AOL News this morning where scientists have concluded we were evolved from rats, ! It's amazing how stupid really smart people can be. Don't be deceived. The truth is
in
the Bible.
Can I ask you the question?
Yeah.
Is there a space between the last word and the ! Because it's a very old, angry white person thing to do.
What?
To finish the sentence and then to put a bunch of spaces and then the punctuation. Oh. Did he do that?
No, he didn't, sadly. No, he was just truly perplexed at the rats.
I'm surprised there's no, like, ellipsis in this tweet somewhere. It's also an angry old white person thing to do.
Yeah. So I'm reading from a Deadspin article, and the article points out that it's very clear he only read the headline because it doesn't talk about rats. It's a rat-like creature, but it's a mammal that's not a rat. And it just kind of talks about that they are the earliest known ancestors of most modern mammals. So,
just a rat-like creature?
Yes.
We all came from rats.
A rat-like creature related to us long time ago. Again, not like our uncle or something. Not like was around 60 years ago, and in that span, here we are. But no, Aubrey Huff, he's not done, man. If the evidence is there for evolution... Where are the fossils of all the creatures that were supposedly slowly over millions of years evolving into us? There isn't any. And why do we still have monkeys?
I like how you laughed because he messed up the grammar. You're not laughing at what he's making the point. You paused the grammar part. You're so annoying.
And why do we still have monkeys if we evolved from them? This is so true. No one's talking about this.
No, actually, this is like when you've never been to a museum. Come on, man. Can I just ask, where is Abiha from? Is it Texas?
I'm looking it up right now. I'm going to say North Carolina. It's Ohio.
Yeah. Wannabe South.
So there's a lot more. He talks about saying there are a lot of people who strongly agree
just
with
Aubrey Huff and the, John Kasich
with the evolution quote unquote theory, but then really looked into real evidence that the mainstream scientists and world dare not touch.
I think you mean lamestream scientists.
Yeah, that's honestly so true. So basically, I don't know if you know this, but Aubrey Huff, he's read the Bible. He has read the Bible, and the truth is there. And really, we're all just sheeple. We need to open our eyes.
I like how this is like the weird like alt-right left turn that the Kyrie Irving flat earth theory took. This is like Aubrey Huff being like, evolution's not real. It's just God. Yep. No such thing. And meanwhile, Kyrie Irving was just like, yeah, I've never seen a picture of the real round earth.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Aubrey Huff was like, I'm going to take a very, 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 very strict religious view of this.
Keith Law, the ESPN reporter, tweeted him a couple studies about, hey,
I saw this.
Evolution is real. Aubrey Huff, no, he's got that one in lockdown too. Guess what his defense is? You lost me when you tweeted a study from Berkeley. Unless, of course, we're talking about protesting, which they know a lot about. True. I'll take God's word over an overpriced university any day of the week. Ugh. Ugh.
Where's
it's
the
like
lie?
Cream of the crop. I'm using that line from now on.
I'll take God's word over an overpriced. Yeah, like you fail your final.
Yeah.
And you're just like, listen, professor, God told me that this was the right answer. So I'll take God's word over your stupid ass F grade any day of the week.
Yeah. Oh, you say I have, quote, student loans. God says I'm debt free. So.
Yeah. New York University is waiting for those checks. And we're just like, listen, God told me that I could come here. And so, therefore, I'm just entitled to that.
Yeah.
It's a useful argument. I don't know. Why don't we make this argument more often?
This is the last one. I know we're dragging this out. But one user tweeted jokingly, Aubrey, do you believe in Imagine Dragons? Referring to, of course, the popular musical act.
What a very strange thing to ask him.
I know. I think he was trying to pull his leg or just get something out of him. And guess what? It worked. He replies,
I'm shocked that it worked.
Actually, dragons aren't imagined. They are nothing but dinosaurs that the ancient civilizations seen all over the planet. The term dinosaur was coined in 1841. So yes, I do believe in dragons and dinosaurs.
Wait, what? He believes in dragons and dinosaurs, but he doesn't believe in old rats?
Yo, Mike Drop. Aubrey is out.
This is like when you watch Game of Thrones and read the Bible. Yeah. Those are the only two things you do.
Yep. So Audrey's dropping some science on us.
Yeah, what the? Listen, how am I going to argue with it?
There was really nothing in there that I could disagree with, if I'm being completely honest.
Climate change isn't even real anymore, so.
Yeah, show me it's warm in places of the world.
It is warm in places of the world.
But it's cold here, so global, quote, warming? How about global colding?
Can you show me a news segment that talked about the temperature from 1830? Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
All right, enough of this. We might be a political podcast now. Who knows? We'll figure it out when we come back. Hey, all of this is hustle. Y'all about to make it where I gotta show my muscle. When I'm getting to it, girl, it's easier to love you. Tried to give me scraps, I made them pieces to the puzzle. I grind. Ain't no secret money on my mind. Sit at my table, then you want my time. And I don't play that. I'm stunting for the payback. I'm from a Golden State at, but Portland where I lay at. I'm the daddy, Mac daddy, with Hoover rapping. Y'all be on your crisscross, hustling backwards. All this game I'm giving is probably gonna be a caption. When the lights and camera off, I'ma still be by that action. All right, Alex. So, in the interest of convincing people that we're not actually a political podcast anymore.
Do we have to talk about baseball?
Yeah. There were these things called awards that were given out. I know we already talked about how the lamestream media didn't cover the fact that we won Rookie of the Year podcast. But yeah, it feels like maybe we should at least do some gut reactions to the slew of pretty useless and pretty meaningless awards that were given out in the last week.
Yeah, so far we've got Gold Glove, Rookie of the Year, and Manager of the Year. Really, like, it's all just pretty meaningless.
Yeah.
Like whether or not you got this award has nothing to do with how your team performed. Like, you getting this award after the season's over is more just kind of a trophy that you can put on yourself, but I guess that's literally what it is, so.
I think it's cool.
Whatever.
I mean, I'd be hype if I won Gold Glove.
Yeah.
I know you have sort of a little bit of a gripe with the Gold Glove system as it works or as it is currently constructed, so here you go. 30 seconds on the clock.
Bam. All right, real quick. So, Matt Chapman, A's rookie third baseman, did not win the Gold Glove at third base. And Evan Longoria won it instead.
I didn't even know he played this year.
Yeah, feel like...
They were talking on Effectively Wild. They were talking on Effectively Wild last week about how he was part of a draft class that was really weak and he was the top of it. And I forget what player they were making this point for. But I was like, is Evan Longoria still in the league?
Yeah, right. Well, his contract is like a bajillion years long and they still have like a bajillion dollars to pay him. So
Evan Longoria is like Bizarro World David Wright that doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. But okay, so Chapman did not win AL Gold Glove at third base.
You know why? Because he's from Berkeley. Because he lives in Berkeley.
Yeah.
He plays for a team that's from Berkeley.
Well, fuck you. It's Oakland, bro.
Yeah, but they're too close. They're too close to that liberal epicenter. You can't believe anything comes out of there.
Okay, but anyway, defensive metrics. I'm not going to say that they are perfect. I'm not going to say that they are the necessarily best and only way of evaluating a player. But according to Fangraphs, he was the second best third baseman in baseball this year, just behind Nolan Arenado, who you may know is in the National League.
That would indicate Arenado, very good at defense.
That would indicate that Chapman is, in fact, the best third baseman, perhaps, in the American League.
You would think.
One would think. But there's this weird quirk in the rule that, like, you have to have logged your innings basically before September. It's like you have to have logged, I don't know, 670-something innings by your 138th game, which is very bizarre to me because it just it's trying to, like, exclude players who, like, come up in the second half or whatever. But, like,
you know what they say.
So why?
Those last 24 games are way less important than those first 24.
I don't even understand the rationale behind this. Like, I get they're trying to, like, make sure it's, like, whatever, part-time players don't get it or guys who are called up in September. But, like, if they're good, why do you want to exclude them? Like, you can have an innings limit. That's fine.
Also,
but, like,
the thing
why
about,
does it matter where they play it?
The thing about Matt Chapman is that the defensive statistic that you were talking about is, like, an aggregate statistic. It's not, like, a per-game statistic. He led the aggregate statistic in less time than the rest of these players.
Yes.
So that means he was not only better, he was considerably better.
Yeah. I'm not even going to list off the statistics, but, like, he was one of the best defensive players in baseball this year, and he only played half the year. So I just have a bone to pick with whoever made these rules. Rob Manfred, I want to bring him on and grill him about this because
yeah,
this
get
is
him in the studio.
This is pretty much the biggest problem in baseball.
Where does
right
Rob
now.
Manfred live? Let's find him. He probably lives somewhere near New York. It feels like where baseball is centered out of.
Yeah, probably.
Here's my hot take. You're just mad that Matt Chapman didn't win because you're part of this coddled millennial culture where you just want to reward people for nothing. Everyone gets a trophy. What, he played on a terrible team. Why should he win? Terrible team. What do you do to help his team win? Huh?
That's so true.
What? God, you just want everyone?
Were,
what,
the Rays
everyone
were so
gets a
good
gold,
this year.
Everyone gets a gold glove now. What? Now the person who's the best needs to get a, what, platinum glove?
Yeah.
Everyone gets a gold glove, and the winner gets a platinum glove now.
That's so true.
That's what I want.
That's not even fair to everyone else. Just give everyone a platinum glove.
Yeah. Then the actual winner gets a diamond glove.
But then that wouldn't be fair, so everyone
would something that everyone gets a trophy. Or
they
something.
All get gloves.
Yeah, we all get gloves and trophies. And
yeah.
All right.
Anyway, moving on from that, actually, I want to bring up something that Joey Votto said about the voters, the writers who cast the votes for, you know, the various awards. And it was actually really not what I thought he was going to say. He says, I'm going to sound an awful lot like I'm stroking people right now.
Interesting phrasing.
What? He goes, but I've always felt like the voters are the savviest and most objective people in baseball.
This is definitely fake. It's not fake in that he didn't say it. It's facetious.
But, like, he's not. This is a long-ass quote. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But he goes, a lot of other awards are voted amongst people in their own little echo chamber. I feel like the writers, because there's so much distance and so many different opinions and schools of thought and so many voters,
I'm afraid of where this is going because he said echo chamber and he's talking about schools of thought.
Yeah.
Does Joey Votto think all lives matter?
He just talks about how he thinks that this is, like, the most researched and the point system helps. I don't know.
Also, he's won Gold Gloves before, right?
Has he?
I think so.
I don't know.
Who cares?
Just, I'm like,
Joey, take Joey Votto.
Joey Votto, you're, like, so good. You're one of the only good things.
He's an icon. He's a pillar of the podcast.
He feels like one of those people, I feel like he would come out and be like, yeah, those voters suck.
Yeah.
Those voters are mostly wrong.
And he wouldn't hold anything back either.
Yeah. I wonder what they've got on him. What do you think they're blackmailing him with?
They're probably going to take away his platinum glove.
Yeah. Or, like, his donkey.
All right. Other awards. Rookie of the Year. We don't need to talk about this. Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger. Literally nothing to say. They both won unanimous.
Yep.
It was very obvious. Yeah. They both hit many, many home runs.
Nah, dude. I was kind of thinking Matt Olson was going to win over Judge, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. What about Matt Chapman?
Yeah, true.
Look at you. Look at this. Everyone gets a freaking award.
Yeah.
There's rookies of the year next year.
Yeah, actually.
Every single player who debuted wins rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they hit many home runs tends to be a good thing.
Yep.
And then manager of the year. Who won it?
That would be Paul Molitor of the Twins and Torey Lovullo, the Diamondbacks manager.
Lovullo? Lavolo?
Lavolo?
Lovullo?
Lovullo? Anyway. Manager of the Year is probably the one I really care least about, because neither of these teams won the World Series, so...
Can I do a 30-second gripe like you did with...
Yes, go for it. All you.
With Chapman?
All you. Grab the mic.
You know what I don't like is that...
Tell me what you don't like. Tell me what grinds your gears, Bobby.
In every single sport, it's always the team that overperforms by what the people before the season decided the team was supposed to do. Whatever manager is the leader of a team that overperforms their win expectancy... But, like, who is deciding that the expectations going into the year were correct to begin with? Like, we're operating under the assumption that those were good expectations for teams, and that managers overperforming those expectations automatically means that they did well, as opposed to, like, where I think that Dave Roberts should have won NL Manager of the Year, because I think it's hard to have a team that has a lot of talent. I mean, this is a that sounds weird, but I think it's hard to have a team that has a lot of talent, a lot of egos, plays in a big market, and then actually meet and exceed those high expectations that you already had. Like, they were expected to be the best team in the league, and then they were the best team in the league. I think that's almost harder. I think if you went back in history, this is just the way I feel about this. I haven't done any research into this at all. But I think if you went back in history, you'd find that it was more difficult to meet and exceed expectations when they were high than just exceed expectations when they were low. To me personally, I don't think you should just automatically get the award because you were on a team that was bad last year and, like, was slightly better than average this year, like, for the Twins. And the Diamondbacks were bad last year, but they weren't supposed to be bad last year. They were just what they should be this year. Like, it's not like they suddenly made a run to the World Series when they shouldn't have. I don't know. I'm of the mind that managers should be rewarded for being the best, and I think Dave Roberts was the best on the best team. Like, that's why I also feel like Greg Popovich should win it in the NBA every year, because his team is expected to be good, and they are always good, and he is the reason.
Why not Kerr?
Because that team is on autopilot. You don't even need Steve Kerr on the sideline. Literally, it's literally just the Death Star. They press a button, and then they evaporate every other team.
Yeah. I mean,
when he was out, they won.
I am of the opinion that Manager of the Year, especially in baseball, is probably the least meaningful award, because it's so hard to, like, actually know, I don't know, to be able to tell a good manager from a bad manager. You can obviously be like, this person makes poor decisions, they're not a very good manager. You can tell, they usually don't stick around very long. Or this person makes savvy decisions, this person's good with their bullpen or whatever. But, like, quantifying that and, like, ranking, well, I think that so-and-so is four ticks above this person. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I think Dave Roberts and Lovullo, or however you say his name, are probably maybe on similar planes. I don't really know. I have no idea. There are no stats for this aside from the team's record. And so, like, sure, yes, I think Roberts probably should have won too. But I think the argument for Roberts is probably similar to the one for most other managers of teams who did well.
I just think, like, we just get the same trite, overused argument every year when a manager wins it from a team that, like, quote unquote, overperforms, right? It's like, he got his guys to try hard. You know, they really loved it. They went so hard. They're low on talent, but they're high on heart. And I'm just like, I'm so sick of hearing that. Like, guess what? Every MLB player should try hard.
Yeah.
Getting your guys to try hard is literally the bare minimum. Like, you don't think the Dodgers were trying hard? They tried really hard.
We gave manager of the year to a guy who bat Paul Goldschmidt cleanup. That should be enough to just disqualify him.
Yeah. I know. That's what I'm saying. They don't even look. They don't even look at these things.
Yeah.
They're just like, well, what were they expected to win? And what did they win? This is basic subtraction.
I don't feel very strongly about it either way. Dave Roberts should have gotten it, but also good for this guy.
You know what? I'm putting an abrupt ending to this. Goodbye. We're done. We're done talking about this. Don't want to talk about this anymore. Don't bring it up. We're over. Done. Let's move on.
Wait, real quick. All right. Before we get to our last segment, gut reacts. Who wins MVP? Judge or Altuve?
Altuve.
Yeah.
I also want Altuve to win, so that might be coloring my decision. But yeah. I also just think Judge had that like huge slump for a while there. And Altuve was the picture of consistency and also played really good defense at a premium middle infield position. And also Judge played incredible defense. And they're very similar in war. And I know all the statistics put them very neck and neck. I just think the BBWAA will reward a guy for consistency because they have that made up as some ideal to reach.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on all that. I wouldn't be that upset if Judge got it, honestly, because like he had his huge slump late in the season. But also, I think that tends to make us forget about just how goddamn good he was at the beginning. He was on a tear.
End.
Yeah. Yes.
The most home runs that he hit in a month was September.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm biased towards guys who can hit for average, hit for power, and also steal bases. Like, if you have that, that usually puts you, I don't know, above guys who are more of a one-trick pony, like a guy like Judge who's got power. But I agree with you on the consistency thing. I would rather take that for my team because I feel like Judge is really good, but at a certain point there's like diminishing returns. Like, okay, you can only hit so many home runs and like help your team when you're like creating this massive crater in June and or July and August or whatever.
Yeah. Let's move on. So, keeping with the theme of baseball, which from time to time is the theme of this podcast, I feel like.
Occasionally.
So, there's a lot of free agents this year.
There are many.
Many important ones will go places and affect teams.
Yeah.
In theory.
Like, honestly, this offseason really has the potential to determine how next season goes.
As most offseasons do. We don't care about any of that at all.
Nope.
We're not going to predict where we think people are going to end up. We're not going to predict how we think it'll affect 2018 season. Yeah, we don't care about that.
You're not going to hear Shohei Ohtani's name on this podcast.
You just said it.
Oh, ooh, you got me there.
It's literally useless to try to predict what's going to happen in 2018 this early on. So instead, we decided that we were just going to pick the spiritual landing point of which free agents we thought should land where.
Yeah, where do we want to see these players end up?
Where do we think they should end up based off their mythology?
Yes, exactly. What will drive them towards a city? What forces beyond our control will make them end up somewhere?
If this were a movie, where would they end up? Any other stupid reasons that we chose these?
Nope.
Nothing
let's go.
Else to say?
Let's go.
All right, you go first.
My first one is Mike Moustakas. So we each pick three for we each pick three, and my first is Mike Moustakas. He is going to the Cardinals because that just feels like a very Mike Moustakas place to end up. I think they are set at third base. That said, I don't know. It feels like the personality just probably fits with the culture there. He feels like he'd fit in St. Louis. I'm not going to slander Mike Moustakas.
Why? We haven't slandered anyone in this podcast.
But
we have to keep up with the tradition.
You got a top five in baseball punchable face going to like the top one punchable team.
Organization.
So
punch the logo.
So I don't know. I feel like he and Mike Matheny would probably get along.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, I chose For my first person,
yes,
I chose Jake Arrieta.
Yes.
And for the destination, I chose the Texas Rangers.
Ooh.
I don't really know why. It's sort of just, I feel it, man. He's from Texas. He has that beard that's sort of like, I'm Southern, but I'm also a hipster. I'm like a trendy Southerner, you know? I am from Texas, but I also like emo rock. And I like barbecue, but I like to eat it in hip places where I can people watch. That feels like Jake Arrieta to me. And for whatever reason, that feels like the Texas Rangers. And I just can't see him being on the Astros.
Yeah.
So I chose the Rangers.
I would really like to see that because that's like a really fun team, like full of really fun players. And Arrieta would just come into the clubhouse and be like, turn that music off. It's game day. What the heck are we doing, guys?
what the heck?
We gotta really chill out here, man, and put on our game faces, bros.
Yeah, we know nothing about Jake Arrieta. We're totally
not at
just
all.
Making this up. He's probably really fun. He's probably a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's definitely towards that aging curve.
He's like, if we're putting him on a political spectrum, he's like center right. Like he's had some questionable tweets in the past.
Yeah.
Just saying.
He definitely has a lot of guns.
Yep. I wonder if he wants to build that wall.
Ooh.
Wonder how the entire Latin infield of the Rangers feels about that.
You think Jake Arrieta can speak Spanish to talk with the Spanish-speaking infield there?
My guess is he probably doesn't really feel inclined to do that.
Hola. Me llamo Jake Arrieta.
El Pelota.
He doesn't have an accent. We're just giving him like he's wearing a 10-gallon hat.
It's like we're giving him like a Minnesota or like Canada accent or something.
Yeah, man, build that wall north and south.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay.
Next.
Next on my list, CC Sabathia.
Love him.
I'm going to bring him to the A's.
Yeah.
Bay Area.
Nice.
A's could use.
He shouldn't be part of the evil empire anymore.
Nah, it's time. I think it sounds like the Yankees have a leg up on re-signing him, but.
And by leg up, you mean he's just going back there for sure.
Yeah, probably. But I would like to see him come to the A's. Bay Area native, grew up in El Cerrito. The A's could use a veteran on the pitching staff, if we're being real. They have a lot of young guys, and pretty much none of them are proven. So, yeah, they could use that. Just put him in the five spot. He just comes out every fifth day, tosses a few innings, and acts as a mentor.
Let's be real. He's going to end up in the third spot by the end of the year.
Yeah. It would not surprise me if he was throwing some like number one games in there. Let's be very real about this.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But anyway, I would love that.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because he could be, I mean, he does like a lot of like community work too.
Yeah.
And I feel like Oakland, Bay Area is a great place for him to bring that back to.
Yeah, totally.
I'm down.
All right. Number two on your list.
Number two on my list is Michael Pineda.
Okay.
I chose Michael Pineda to come to, I like how you chose number two, come back to your team. I chose number two, come back to the Mets. Come to the Mets. I am bringing Michael Pineda to the Mets because, spiritually speaking, he's a hard-throwing right-hander who is coming off of injury, and they're hoping that by the end of the year he can contribute. So he is a Mets pitcher.
Yep, sounds like a Met.
That's literally the only reason I chose him. Also, he's cheap. On the MLB trade rumors list that I brought up to look at who the free agents were like 2 minutes before we did this segment, it said that he was going to get like 2 years, $6 million. That was the prediction. That sounds like a very Metsian contract. Even less, like 2 years, $5.8 million, just because they don't want to give that extra $200K.
Yeah, and maybe he wants
because Bernie Madoff is still making it somehow in jail.
Yeah, too, and they're still paying Bobby Bonilla.
They need to save that million off Michael Pineda's 2 year deal.
And you know what? Maybe he really likes New York. He wants to stay in the Big Apple, but the Yankees are like, we don't need you anymore.
All right, Alex, third and final. Who is your last spiritually landing destination player? We really didn't name this very effectively, but.
You could say it was effectively wild.
Boo. He's here all offseason, ladies
keep,
and gents.
We keep referencing this like effectively wild.
No
and,
one
like,
who listens to our podcast also listens to effectively wild.
It's another baseball podcast, though.
Yeah.
Hosted over at FanGraphs.
It's better than ours.
It is better than ours.
But they're not rookies.
To ours anyway.
They're not rookies, so
they're
they didn't
rookies.
Win an award.
And also, I feel like we are starting out better than they probably started out.
Probably not.
All right. Anyway, third free agent.
I've never listened to Effectively Wild episode one.
Me neither. I have no inclination to either. They're talking about like stuff from 2012 or something. Like, who are the top free agents? I don't care.
All right.
Last Finish. One. You ready? Finish strong. Ichiro back to the Mariners.
Yes. That doesn't even need explanation. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Ichiro, go back. Love it.
He's He's done, man. He's on his last legs. Although he could also play for 5 more years, so who knows?
The Mariners should give him a contract.
They really should.
I don't trust Jerry DePoto. If he gets signed by the Mariners, they're gonna flip him.
Yeah.
Which would be way too sad.
Yeah, they're gonna like flip him for like a single A reliever and a new bucket of balls.
And a jumbo sized bag of double bubble. No, I like that. I sort of like the like actually finish your career with a team as opposed to like the one day contract thing. I ain't with that.
Yeah, I mean it's like
you do what you have to do if you don't end up finishing your career with that team. But if you can, you should finish it with that team.
Yeah,
that just feels more right.
Yeah,
writer.
Yeah, so I would like to. I almost went CC to the Indians, but I was like, nah,
to the A's.
I gotta save that one for Ichiro. So Ichiro to the Mariners. I could actually see that happening potentially.
Yeah, that might actually. This might be the only one that actually happens.
Do the Mariners have an outfield? Let me know.
Actually, the last one that I have might actually happen. So, I mean, I haven't actually looked into any of this, but it sort of feels like it might happen. So you started with a Royals player. I'm gonna finish with a Royals player.
Yeah.
You know I gotta go with my boy, my mortal enemy.
One and only.
That man.
Yes.
Eric Hosmer. So he's definitely my most hated player in MLB. I don't really have any, you know, real life reason to hate Eric Hosmer other than the fact that he was really annoying in the 2015 World Series when his team beat my team.
Yeah, again, disclaimer. Probably a perfectly fine person.
Yeah, definitely saved someone's life off the subway tracks one time. I think I remember reading that, and I'm pretty sure I brought that up on this podcast before.
And we just didn't know. We didn't come to a conclusion.
Definitely maybe saved someone's life on the subway.
Look it up for yourself if you're really that interested.
You care that much this late into the podcast.
Okay, but where's he ending up?
Obviously the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Of course he's ending up on the Red Sox.
Obviously.
Okay, number one. It's the Red Sox.
It is the Red Sox.
You
want to
talk about evil empire?
Yeah.
There are several evil empires in baseball. And by several, I mean two. And by two, I mean the Yankees and Red Sox.
Yep.
The Red Sox would definitely give him way more money than he needs to. And they'd bring Scott Boras into a press conference in Boston so that he could talk about how great Eric Hosmer is, even though he was a replacement level player for the last 2 years, other than this past year. Okay. And also, the Red Sox need a first baseman. And third, is that three? I don't even know how many points I'm going to.
Sure.
I'm so angry.
Yeah.
I'm so fired up. The last point is that there's a stupid green monster in left field in Boston, and Eric Hosmer is an opposite field hitter, and I just feel like he could poke a lot of oppo-poppo homers in Boston, and it would just infuriate me. There's no reason that Eric Hosmer can't hit to the pull side, and there's no reason that that the monster in left field should only be like 130 feet away. So he's definitely going to hit a bunch of just fly balls that go out. And it's going to make me furious when the Red Sox win the 2018 World Series.
Yeah, but they actually are. They're really good.
I know. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be so many people that I dislike, and then like three people that I really like. Like Mookie Betts and Rafael Devers and all the young players that aren't tainted by that stupid Red Sox aura.
Yep, basically. I'm similar to the Thriller in Manila. Honeys call me Bigger, the condom filler. Whether it's stiff tongue or stiff dick, Biggie squeeze it to make shit fit. Now check this shit, I got the pack of Rough Riders in the back of the Pathfinder. You know the epilogue by James Todd Smith. I get swift with the lyrical gift.
Well, I'm off my soapbox about Eric Hosmer and about the Red Sox, and they are, you know, perfect match for each other.
I like that you and I independently picked the two most easily hateable Royals and sent them to the most easily hateable teams.
Why not?
Yeah,
we don't think about this positively. I mean, we kind of did, but the first person that popped into my mind was Eric Hosmer.
Yeah,
when we sort of made up this segment out of thin air.
Yep.
Anything else to say, Alex?
Not really. We got the rest of the awards coming out next week, so I'm sure we will have answers to our questions soon enough.
And the season is now going to be well in the rear view for the remainder of the podcast that we do for this off season. So we're really going to try to get into some weird stuff. Hopefully y'all enjoy it. We're going to have some guests on. We're setting up a special guest. It's going to be a surprise, but it'll be coming up soon.
Yeah. And you know, baseball may be winding down, but we are just winding up. We're just getting ready.
Facts.
Yeah.
I feel like we end every podcast like this.
Oh, we do, but it's mid-November. We're shaking off the cold. We're getting in here, getting hot in the studio.
It is warm in the studio.
It is very warm in the studio. Folks, we are burning up.
And starving. So if we don't get off this podcast now, it's going to get very, very, very weird.
No, it's just going to get silent. We're just going to pass out.
All right. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Tipping Pitches. And if you didn't, write us a vague and cryptic review and send it to our email.
Yeah, tippingpitchespod@gmail.com.
All right, thanks, y'all.
See you next week. I think David Roberts.
What are you, his mother?